Live from the Veterans Radio Studio and the Ave Maria Network, this is Veterans Radio. And now, here's your host, Gary Lilly.
And good morning to everybody. Welcome to Veterans Radio. To all you folks listening to us around the globe, and there are people listening around the globe, thank you for listening in. Welcome to Veterans Radio. I'm Gary Lilly, CB, Chu Lai, Vietnam, Republic of 1966. And sitting over here at the broadcast booth with me is Dale Thronberry.
Good morning, Gary, and welcome to Veterans Radio again to all of our listeners out there. We're so grateful and thankful that you tune in and listen to us. I just want to point out that we are attempting to webcast again today. We've got looks like the pictures are up, and we didn't have time to load in all of the pictures that we normally put in there, but we're going to try it again today. So if you want to watch and see how ugly we really are, you can go to Veterans Radio and click on Watch Us Live.
And over in the control room is Matt Durr. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
I'm great. He's a student at Washtenaw Community College. I see him there every now and then because I'm taking a class myself, the history of the United States since 1877. And
well, you've been there for all of it.
I laugh because I remember over half of it. Also, Kai. Oh, where are you, Kai? Good morning to you.
Good morning. How's it going over there?
Real good. There's a guy that holds his age. I thought he was barely 20 years old. He's 40. Kai, you're going to look young to the end, I swear.
Yeah, thanks. But that was a secret. You wasn't supposed to tell anybody.
Oh, okay. I won't tell him then. And so, also the student at Washtenaw Community College, I see Kai over there every now and then, too. This is great. Good school. Today's going to be a very good program. We're going to get into it real fast. It's going to be about the things that those who have been to war or have been in the military and not at war, but have had things happen that we laugh at, and I guarantee you some of them, the civilians, are going to sit back and they're going to say, what? How can you laugh at that? I just want to give you an example of it. This happened to me. I was at Chu Lai Air Base. Now, we weren't at the air base itself. When I arrived in Chu Lai, it was sand dunes and rice paddies. They had a 3,500-foot metal airstrip that they actually had arrestor hooks on there for the A-4 attack aircraft to hook onto, just like on a helicopter, because it was long enough for them to take off, but not long enough for them to land. And everybody was living in tents and on the ground, and there was jungle. And scrub jungle, I guess best way to describe it. So my fire team of four guys, Scotty Baird, Fat Willie, and Jeff from Texas, were all working on building the drainage system with, you know, you'd have culverts under the road and you'd have cement wings out there to keep them from washing away. We were doing the cement wings. One of them, we always had to worry about the forms bursting and the cement going all over the place. Then a heck of a cleanup mess trying to clean it up with a sledgehammer and do it all over again. So we poured one real late one night, one evening. And we had about half an hour before the chow hall closed. And I said, okay, let's go. We'll get some chow before it closes. Scotty Baird says, no, I'm going to sit here and see if the forms hold. In fact, Willie says, I'm going to do the same thing. Gunn from Texas, nobody used the first name. So Gunn says, I'm going to stay too. I said, okay, I'll stay. So we sat there for 15 minutes and not a creak out of the forms. And I said, all right, those forms are going to hold. Let's go get something to eat. I'm starving. Scotty says, no, I'm going to wait. Willie says, I'll wait. Gunn says, I'll wait. And I said, well, I'm not. I want to go get something to eat. I'll take the shovels. And you guys can carry the rest of the tools. So I start walking down this road that was about like a forest trail. You know, it was not a road. It was a forest trail through the jungles. I could reach out just about from the edge of the road and touch the jungle. And I was walking down, and I had a pair of pants on that were ripped to shreds from working with a belt. And I had my boots on and a ratty old pair of socks. That was it. We never wore anything else. And I've got four shovels over my shoulder, and it's dark. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Should I be making noise so one of the Marines doesn't shoot me? Or should I be real quiet so some bad guy doesn't shoot me? And while I'm contemplating that, there's a turn in the road that made a sharp turn to the left. And as I got very, very close to it, I heard the loudest sound in the world. It was the bolt of an M60 racking in around. And a guy yells out, it was not free fire, a guy yells out, "Halt, who goes there?" And my mind froze. And I couldn't think of who goes there. And my mind is racing, and I'm waiting for that flash that's going to be the last thing I ever see. And finally I shouted out, "Don't shoot, don't shoot. I'll think of it in a minute." And, of course, see me, friend, friend. And they started laughing. And so, come on, let's go. Well, when I got up there, I said, "Where did you guys come from?" They said, "Well, we set up an ambush." And I said, "Oh, geez, don't shoot. I got some buddies following behind me. No, don't shoot them either." And they laughed like crazy when I went by. And it was totally, well, I ended up laughing about it, but at that time I was tense.
you would be tense because, you never knew what was going to happen over there. No. And any time that you were out after hours, let's put it that way, and in a place that you probably didn't belong, they were told to challenge, and if you didn't come up with the right password, they were supposed to, nail you. And so I can imagine your mind freezing.
And it did. I mean, I was within 50 feet of them, 40 feet of them, so it's not like it was long distance. Well, we have somebody on the line that's got his own funny story. Jim Shepherd, is that who we have? Okay, I'm Jim Shepherd, good morning. Welcome to Veterans Radio. Oh, push the button. I'm going to put a big sign on my nose, push the button. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Veterans Radio.
Hey, you got the button this time, Gary. Good morning, Gary.
I got the button this time, right. You're on. What were you in? What branch of the service were you in, and where were you, Jim?
Well, I was in the Air Force and spent 3.5 years in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Okinawa, Thailand. I was just listening to your story there, Gary. If someday on your station you're going to have to tell a story that the only Seabees would have to tell a story about picking up an aircraft hangar and turning it 90 degrees.
Oh, geez, yes. I got photographs to prove it. I might talk about it later on. What happened to you that has you laughing after all these years?
Well, it's not a rib tickler type of story, but it's only a story that probably would come out of a series of events. Being in the military, being in a war zone, and having spent more than 2 years of your life living with the same guy that gets one of those friendships that's bound forever. We had just left Okinawa after 18 months. We worked in the 400th MMS there. We got transferred down to Cameron Bay, worked in the 412th Munitions Maintenance Squadron. And I've heard all the Air Force stuff, the country club stories that we always heard from the guys who were in the bush.
Right.
I admit we had bunks. Had a really nice cop to go to, and felt very privileged for that. Hopefully some of those hot rocks or napalm or whatever we built got some of our friends home. That's all I can pray for. But anyway, it was early 68, and the story you asked me to tell, it was, I don't know, what day it was. It was between hot and damn hot. And
I remember that day.
Yeah. It was like the day before. Anyway, I was linked up with Dick Darrell. We got together when we were in tech school in Denver, Colorado, and he became my best friend. I even named my son after him. But
Big Darrell, is it?
Yeah, he was Big Darrell. He got the name Lumberjack because of his Norwegian descent that stuck with him, and he's been Lumberjack for the last 40-plus years. Everybody in my family knows him by that. You guys know him by that. You met him when we got together in Washington.
He's a great guy. And I great guy. I can't wait for the story. Go ahead, let him know.
Yeah, well, anyway, we got back from the bomb dump about a stupid hour in the morning, and Lumberjack was in one of his normal positions, and that was laying on his rack in his skivvies with his big old headphones on, listening to country music on a reel-to-reel tape deck that he bought from the BX. You know how that was going at the time.
And what kind of skivvies were they?
Well, I'll tell you right now, they were just green, okay? I'll get to the punchline here in a second.
Okay.
But they were his favorite ones because his girlfriend had sent them to him. So that was just normal attire when we were in the barracks. Anyway, it was like really, really early in the morning, and writing a letter home, and he was laying on his rack reading a Mickey Spillane novel or something. And first concussion came in. The bad guys were, I don't know, just lobbing mortars in or rockets, whatever they were at the time. And, of course, it's like the first clap of thunder. You go to the window to see what's going on. You know what type of deal?
Okay.
Well, anyway, they were banging him up on the base pretty good, and they knocked out our generator. I was going to be this hero, and we had two-story barracks.
Okay.
So I was going to run through the barracks and try to wake some of these guys up, because I tried to wake some of them up before, and if they spent too much time at the EM club, they were kind of tough to get up, you know?
I did it myself. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, we had a sandbag bunker between our barracks and our sister barracks, and so everybody's screaming, get in the bunker, and it was probably like a scene out of Keystone Cops, you know, the
yep.
guys are ricocheting off each other, and it was probably chaotic. It seemed like it lasts forever. It was probably 45 seconds, but I come back downstairs, and I thought, and I had yelled at Lumberjack before I'd gone upstairs to go to the bunker, and so I came back down, just before I went out the back door to go to the bunker, I said, I better check on him. So, yeah, and the other thing I got to say is Lumberjack is like 6'3", 245, no neck, got hands as big as first baseman gloves. And we've been rolling iron bombs for 2.5 years, so he was in pretty good shape. But the Kodak moment that I'll forever have embedded in my brain is stepping in there to yell at him to make sure he's in the bunker, and here's this giant of a man with his combat boots on, his helmet on, his flak vest on, and he's attempting to put his web pistol belt on, but all he else has got on is these green silk boxer shorts that his girlfriend sent him. And I had this vision of waking up in the morning next to a guy with silk boxer shorts in the bunker. And I told him, I yelled at him, I would not go to the bunker with him unless he put his pants on. And that has stuck forever.
Well, what I remember you saying is, if you think I'm going to be found dead in a bunker with a guy wearing silk underwear, you're crazy.
That's exactly what flashed through my mind. It was like the 6 o'clock news when your parents see it, you know?
All right.
That's enough to give you a traumatic stress syndrome right there.
Well, I've got... Hey, Jim, thanks a lot for being on and sharing that story with us. I did the same thing, I have to admit, but it wasn't a mortar attack. They thought it was a mortar attack, and what happened was we had a guy in security that ran security in our battalion that everybody despised, and with good cause. Well, late at night, our showers were right next... There were wooden platforms with the canvas around them, and right next to the bank that went down to the South China Sea. This guy went in real late, so all the guys that actually worked for a living had taken their showers, and he was by himself, and two of our guys thought that they would play a practical joke slash give him a warning, teach him a lesson, whatever, and they dropped a couple of grenades over the edge of the bank right next to the shower. the grenades went off, the gravel went shooting up in the air and scattering down on him and everything. He went running out of the shower, stark naked, yelling, incoming, incoming, ran to the security bunker, stark naked, where everybody was just, it was a great story afterwards. He was totally humiliated, and we all had a lot of fun with that.
It's a great moment, that's for sure, right out of MASH.
Right out of MASH, exactly. And so some of the people are probably saying, you dropped hand grenades there? Well, I didn't, but a couple of the guys with better sense of humor than me did.
The more courageous ones, right?
Right. So you've had a couple of funny things that happened to you, did you?
I had one. I was just thinking of when he was talking about the running to the bunker, and I think I mentioned this one at breakfast. We were up in Dao Tiang. I was in Vietnam in 1969. And with the 195th Assault Helicopter Company, so I'll kind of give you what we're doing. We were guests at Dao Tiang. It was a pretty big fire base in this three corps there. Anyway, we were sitting there, and they had this mansion building in the middle of the compound, and we started receiving incoming, so we all ran into the bunker that was near our tents. And we're sitting in this tubular bunker, and it's got a little wall at the front. We're all standing up watching the war as it's going on, and these, the BC were coming, they were streaming out of this mansion, and we're going, this is not good. We're, this is very definitely not good. And a mortar, and I can't remember what the name of them are, but those of you that are out there old enough, remember those little darts that we used to have with the caps that we would stick on the end, and we would throw the dart, and it would, you know, go make the boom sound.
Pop. Yep.
The pop sound. Well, this thing, these had little points on them, like looked like regular darts, and this thing came in, one of them came in and hit the ground right next to a guy's foot, but it didn't go off. And we all saw this thing land, and we ran to the back of the bunker, and he just looked down at it, and you could see him close his eyes and scrunch up his face like, this is really going to hurt, and it didn't go off. And he just fainted. Just luckily, the Marines and the Army and everybody that was there, thank you all very much, fought them off and drove them away. But I can never forget Jim's face on that one.
Passing out.
Just, like, this is going to hurt. You know, if you were looking at television, I look like a prune.
A friend of mine was up on a mountain, a Marine, and there was a big hill overlooking the base. And they put two guys up there as the just to watch what's going on down below. And they got a new lieutenant, and everybody forgot that the two of them were up there. So they stayed up there for a week, just waiting, like, when is somebody going to come and get us? But they really didn't care because they didn't want to be in the base. They just wanted some food, and they get resupplied. Well, they got to the point that they were pretty casual about it, and half the time they weren't even wearing any clothes. They were just getting suntans. And so he was squatted down, watching the valley that where the bad guys could approach with binoculars, and his friend was, or his mate, whatever, was laying in the bunk, and he wasn't wearing any clothes either, and they had a dog, and the dog was laying there sound asleep next to his friend on the, it wasn't a bunk, it was whatever they slept on. When all of a sudden, you know those big dragons, with like a kimono dragon?
Yes.
Really, one of them had come walking along looking for something to eat and climbed over the sandbags and was looking down at him. Well, the guy woke, his back was to it. His partner woke up and screamed because they were about a foot apart, their faces. And the dog looked up, saw it, and the dog fainted. And about shortly after that, the new lieutenant found out that they had a couple men up on the hill, and he came walking up and looked at these guys, both of them, you know, looking like jungle men.
Sounded like Tarzan, yeah.
Yes, and he turned to the sergeant and he said, "Sergeant, I think these men have been up here too long."
They don't have a sense of humor.
Right.
They don't.
We got Del Mays on the line. Del, welcome to Veterans Radio. Tell us, what do I have to do?
Got to push the button.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you had to do it more than once. Del, are you there?
Hello. Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Good morning, Del.
Can you hear me all right? Good morning.
Here you're great. Here you're great. You've got a great story that you tell on yourself. Tell us what it is. Tell us what happened, Del.
Okay. Well, we were on our, just got there recently, and we were on our way to our first job site. I'm a heavy equipment operator, so I'm heading for a bulldozer or a front loader or whatever it might be that they want us to do. So we climbed into this deuce and a half, and we're on our way to the job site, wherever it is. So we are going along, and we came on this rice paddy trail type thing, just about room enough for one truck. And we came upon a load of lumber that had overturned into the rice paddy, and we couldn't get around it. And the sergeant in charge of the lumber and the construction said, "Good." He says, "I've got some help. I sure could use it." He said, "You can all stay here until another truck comes by to reload the lumber." So we talked to each other for a while, and it took a few minutes, and I says, "I'm going to get out of this deuce and a half and go for a walk. I'm tired of sitting here and not doing anything." So I says, "I'm going to go for a stroll down this trail and look things over." So I'm walking along the rice paddy, and sort of like it was in Thailand, nothing exciting. You know, rice paddies are all the same. And then I noticed a right, three or four twigs of rice just jumped right up out of the water. And I said, my goodness, says, what in the world is causing that rice? There's something out there. There's got to be these fish or something out there causing that rice to jump up. So I watched it for a little bit later, and whatever it was, apparently it's moving. It came a little bit closer and jumped up again, three or four twigs of rice, all about a foot and a half. And so, and I said, my goodness, there's got to be some kind of a critter down in there, maybe four-legged, maybe like a muskrat or something, or maybe it's a chemical reaction, or what's going on. It was quite hot. And I watched it a little bit more, and whatever it is, it's not afraid of me because it's coming closer, you know. And so I said, well, I'm going to get a look at this crater. And then it went again. Rice went up quite out there a little bit, but lots closer, and the rice jumped up. And I said, well, I am going to go stand on the edge of this rice paddy. And then I thought, you know, if it gets up to me, knowing rice paddies, it's going to be all mucky and muddy, and I'm not going to be able to see what it is anyway. So I says, maybe I'll go back and ask somebody that's been around here and has noticed these things out there, will tell me what it is. So I walked back, excuse me, to the deuce and a half, and I asked, I says, hey, Sarge, look at that, watch this rice paddy. There's something out there causing this rice to jump up, or something disturbing out there in that rice paddy. So he said, okay, he says, we're watching it. It happened again, only quite close, and jumped up, and boy, he hit me across the chest, and I lost my ear. I'm flying through the air, and I hit the dirt. And he's hollering at everybody to take cover under that lumber. I couldn't even get my air. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. I could hear everything, but I couldn't do anything about it. But I finally got myself around and got over there under the lumber. He said, you idiot, we're taking fire from sniper. I said, okay. You know, so that was my first experience with sniper fire.
Well, it's one that you can remember and look back at and laugh.
Oh, yes. Now I can laugh, and I wonder, my goodness, the good Lord had to... It's a good thing he couldn't hit, or he had to take so long zeroing in, or whatever it was, but he didn't fire after that. He either ran out of ammunition, or he didn't figure it was worth it.
He figured somebody out there was smart enough to know what he was doing, Del. I could just see that guy on the other end, you know, and he'd rack-a-doo, shoot and miss you, and
right.
Put in another round, shoot, miss you, but you're still standing there.
So, right, I'm glad I didn't stay out there to see what it really was. I decided that it was going to be, you know, too muddy to see it anyway, so I walked on back. But
okay, yeah. Thanks a lot, Del. We got to go to a break.
Welcome.
We got to go to a break. Thanks for being on the Veterans Radio with us. Are we going to do that the Marine Scholars break right now, or wait? Okay, we're going to do it now. Marine Scholars Fund.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
What's that bell?
Hey!
What's that bell?
Hey!
What's that bell?
Hey!
And that's Country Joe McDonald. And
Country Joe and the Fish.
And the Fish. It was the Fish.
That's right. That was the politically correct version on the song.
I almost fainted when you said you wanted to play that because I was thinking of the politically incorrect. That was a great song, and it was, I guess, a protest song, but it was picked up by all the GIs who had a lot of fun with it. And a lot of those songs that we sang were misinterpreted by the general public.
That's true. And we would also write our own verses. Unfortunately, we can't sing them here. You know,
I doubt there's a single verse that could, written over there that could be sung
but
over here.
You know, there were an awful lot of doo-wop groups over there that would get together and sing. And I mean, it was really interesting because most of us don't have any singing talent at all, but we certainly would sing along with what was ever playing. And the Fish cheer was certainly one of them.
There was some good music that came out of the Vietnam War, but you know what's interesting? In World War II, there was Bill Mauldin, and he wrote cartoons, drew cartoons that were, they were the GI's cartoons. In fact, George Patton, they would appear in Stars and Stripes, and George Patton ordered them to stop doing it, but there was a guy above George Patton who was a big fan of Bill Mauldin, and that was General Eisenhower, and he told General Patton, mind your own business, keep going, Bill. However, generals say to talk to generals. But Bill Mauldin, Willie and Joe, oh, geez, and I've got a funny story for me about Willie and Joe. Willie and Joe were the two grunts that went from Africa to Italy to Europe, and it was always the GI humor that you look at it. In fact, on the flyer, there was one of them, you know, Joe, you saved my life yesterday, and I swore I'd pay you back, and here's my last pair of dry socks. Well, that happened to me. I didn't save anybody's life, but the last pair of dry socks, the guy got a package in the mail, and I offered him $10 for them. What were we making, about $8? I had one pair of socks with no toes, no heels, and were always soaking wet. I had to be careful how I pulled my boots on so the socks didn't come up around my ankle. And when he got these socks in, I offered him $10 for a pair, and he gave me a pair. And, you know, I almost teared up.
Well, it certainly is understandable. You know, socks were very important. It's like, you know, it's interesting that we weren't able to get those supplies because we would look around. We had to go down to Saigon or send somebody to Saigon to buy flight gloves and socks, boots sometimes. I'm not sure how they got diverted.
Right. Well, years later, when we were home, I was talking to my folks and my however it came up, I don't know. My dad said, well, we always wanted to send you something, but you never needed anything. And I said, well, that's not true. Every letter I asked you to send me socks. And he said, yeah, we saw that, but we figured if you needed socks, why don't you just go buy some?
My mother sent me a case of Chef Boyardee ravioli. The cans of Chef Boyardee ravioli. I was able to get $5 a can for those.
You sold them? Oh, you... capitalist. All right, you're listening to Veterans Radio, Humor in War, and we'll be back right after this message.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. PFC Sammy Davis is often called the real Forrest Gump. Details after this.
Why are you so distant?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
You gonna get a job now or what?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org, brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Davis enlisted in the Army. He volunteered for the artillery because his father had been an artilleryman in World War II and then asked to be sent to Vietnam. In November 1967, his unit was helicoptered into Fire Base Cudgel. Shortly after midnight, Battery C came under a heavy mortar attack. At the same time, 1,500 Viet Cong launched an intensive ground assault. Davis's squad was operating in 105 millimeter. Millimeter howitzer that fired 18,000 beehive darts in each shell. When he saw how close the VC were, he took over a machine gun and provided cover for his crew. Convinced they couldn't survive the attack, he rammed a shell into the gun and fired point-blank into the enemy. A mortar round exploded nearby, knocking Davis to the ground, but he got up and kept firing the howitzer. When he ran out of beehives, he fired a white phosphorus shell
and then the last round he had, a propaganda shell filled with leaflets. He heard yelling from the other side of the river, and despite the fact that he couldn't swim, paddled across on an air mattress. Other GIs followed him. He found three wounded soldiers, gave them morphine, and provided covering fire as another GI helped one of the wounded across the river. Davis pulled the other two through the water on the air mattress and resumed the fight. Just before dawn, Davis was wounded in the back and buttocks by friendly fire. President Johnson presented him the Medal of Honor on November 19, 1968. Footage of LBJ putting the medal around Davis's neck appeared in the movie Forrest Gump, with Tom Hanks' head substituted for Davis's. Gump's fictional citation was loosely based on Davis's real one.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro.
Another favorite song, right?
Roly Poly, but I don't remember who did it. Do you?
Sam the Shaman of Pharaohs.
Oh, why didn't I remember that? Of course, of
1965, I think, is when it came out. Anyway, I know where I was. But, Gary, I wanted to ask you a question. What are you doing the weekend of May 20th through 22nd?
I'm going to be in Hudson, Ohio, along with you and Bob Gould and all the Vietnam veterans that we can muster up, because there's a big rally going on down there. Hard to believe, but this is the 50th anniversary of the beginning, the official beginning of the Vietnam War.
Right, and there is going to be a big rally down in Hudson, Ohio. It's sponsored by U.S. Wings,
yep.
Which is the provider of military clothing and paraphernalia and those great bomber jackets and so forth to the Stars and many of the military units around the world, and they are sponsoring this reunion. And they're hoping to get everybody down there. And so I'm going to do a little plug here right now for the place where you've got to stay if you go down to the reunion down there. And that's coming up, the U.S. Wings 2011 50th Anniversary Rally. Then you'll want to stay at the Hudson Akron Clarion Inn and Conference Center. Located at exit 180 off the Ohio Turnpike, the Hudson Akron Clarion Inn is easy access by car and just a short distance from surrounding airports. Having the honor of being named the host hotel for the U.S. Wings 2011 50th anniversary party, they know that they must maintain their reputation as being a rally reunion-friendly hotel. Eat, drink, and dance in the Cruiser's Lounge or spend a relaxing moment with our new tradition of dining in the new Hudson Room. Your special U.S. Wings 2011 rally rate of $79 per night plus tax includes the Clarion Inn complimentary breakfast buffet for two, indoor pool, all right, and wireless internet. For more information, call the Hudson Akron Clarion Inn at 888-403-0031. As for the U.S. Wings promotional rate, that's 888-403-0031. Don't forget, ask for that U.S. Wings promotional rate. We're hoping to see you there. We're all going to be there at the U.S. Wings 50th anniversary of the beginning of the Vietnam War reunion for Vietnam veterans. We're encouraging everyone in that area to come on down and see it. We've got entertainment, famous people. That's Dale and Gary. Dale, Gary, and Bob, yeah, will be the famous people. But right. There are going to be more famous people, and I'm not sure. They're adding more and more entertainment as we go along. A lot of 60s music that you've heard today. And so we're excited, and we encourage you to come down. If you're going to come down and stay overnight, we encourage you to stay at the Clarion Inn and Conference Center.
That's right, Dale, and we're going to be down there to do our program, but we're also going to be down there on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It'll end with a mass set over the hood of a Jeep on Sunday, just like out in the field. But we're going to be going around meeting people, greeting people, and sort of being hosts and introducing everyone to Veterans Radio that hasn't heard of it.
Right, and we're going to be playing music. There's going to be vendors there. I know that you're going to be able to buy books if you want to. By various authors from World War II on up until Iraq, Afghanistan today. They'll be available for you to purchase. So it's a great opportunity to come and learn stories and meet some of your buddies.
And I was talking to Norman Lloyd last night, who did the DVD documentary Shaky's Hill. He was with a company of the CAV, I think it was the 5th or the 7th, in Cambodia. And this guy did a film footage that you wouldn't believe. He was literally on the shirt tails of guys as they were going through the jungle blasting away. And I said to him at one time, you were so close that it was almost shooting over your top of you. And he said, well, that did happen. A couple of guys in front of him did get killed, and he hit the ground, and the guys behind were shooting over the top of him.
We had him on our program a couple of years ago.
We did, Shakey's Hill.
So you can go back and look in our archives and listen to that. And isn't his website just Shakey's Hill?
I believe it's shakeyshill.org.
Okay,
look it up. Do a Google search on Shakey's Hill. Shakey was the youngest kid in the battalion, got killed on that attack, and you can buy that DVD, and it's the most astounding thing I've ever seen. Boy, this guy was, he bought a one-way ticket to Vietnam because he didn't think he'd come back.
This was the Australian cameraman.
He's the Australian cameraman.
That's what I thought.
And you know what's
okay.
So neat? His wife is Korean, and he took out a $450,000 mortgage on his home to produce this. This guy is, he was a 60 Minutes producer and cameraman. Mm-hmm. He said, this is my way of paying back to the Americans for saving Australia in World War II, and my wife's way of saying thank you to the Americans for saving South Korea during the Korean War.
Mm-hmm.
So that's their hearts is the reason why they did it. Okay, we're going to go to who we got on line one. Let me ask, who do we have here on line one? Jonathan?
Yes.
Good morning, Jonathan. How are you? Jonathan Meyer, you were a FAC pilot over there. And you had a couple. You've got some music that tells your funny stories, but there's a couple that we couldn't use them, unfortunately, because of the difference in quality for our purposes today. However, you've got a funny story to talk to tell us about the Pink Elephant Polka.
Right. The way it starts is I was flying along on a dawn patrol, as bored as I could be, up in the tri-border area where nothing could I see. Then I happened to spot a jungle trail, gave the bird a jink. I saw two elephants ambling along, and both of them were pink. So it sort of goes downhill from there. I took a shot at them with my rocket, missed. They must have heard something coming, and so I swung around to try again, and all of a sudden my airplane sort of took a jolt, and I thought, what? What the heck? I couldn't have flown through my own prop wash. Well, I figured I'd get a bit spooked, and I started for home. And when I reported all this, the intel people just laughed at me when I told them I saw pink elephants. And, of course, with Johnny Walker Black at about $4 a fifth and beer practically free, it's not surprising that they figured I was still under the influence. But a couple of days later, I was flying again with an Army guy, a Gary Weintier, and we went to the same area, and he said, by golly, they certainly are pink. So I had a witness, and I've had it confirmed back in 2000. And once more, when I put this story on the fact net, several other facts had seen pink elephants. And it was basically because it must have rolled in the red mud that was on the side of the river, and it dried pink on them. And many of them, as far as we know, were used as VC pack animals.
And that was the reason you shot at them. And when you told me that story, me being an animal lover, that when I watched B-52 arc light strikes out in the hills a couple miles away, I thought, oh, the poor animals.
Well, that's true.
The bad guys.
But you got to expect losses in a big operation.
Yeah. And so war is rotten, and you have to do stuff like that because it means saving lives. What any other kinds of things that you did up there that got people to sort of think you've been a little too long here?
Well, very quickly, before I left, I wrote and recorded a song that I called The Fack and the Green Beret. It's a sort of a two-part song where the Green Beret radio man on the ground is calling for help, and the Fack is being a bit snotty about it. But they do get in and get together. It's all based on a series of little true stories. And call in the fighters and do your best. And it finishes up by saying, just bomb the general area, and when the smoke clears out, we'll count up all the bodies and try to sort them out.
Well, that's something the civilians will have a hard time finding the humor in, but all of your songs, you had some very tough experiences over there, but you managed to put a very funny twist on your music. I've heard your, in fact, I've got your CDs and play them, and they are funny. And some of them we cannot play on the air, but Jonathan,
is there a place where they could find them?
Are they available
to the public?
How can people find your CDs so that they can purchase them?
Well, if I try to give you my email address, it gets a bit complicated. So here's the short one. soba@erols.com. And that stands for Society of Old Bold Aviators at Erols, the defunct ISP. And that can reach me.
Okay. Society of Old Bold Aviators. There are very few, right?
That's one.
If you're bold, you don't get to be old, usually.
Well, that's the classic. But one of my military flying song compatriots said, we are old, and we were bold, and now we're busy talking about it. So we become proof of the pudding that, yes, you can become old and bold.
Well, good for you, and thanks for being on Veterans Radio. It's always a delight to hear you. I saw you first at the wall with the Memorial Day Writers Project, and you and your sidekick singing your songs, and every one of your songs tells a story. Thanks a lot,
Jonathan.
Thank
you very much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
We've got a break coming up, and then we're going to have Bill Feit and Dave Martin on. I can't believe how fast it's going, but in this last segment, you had something that you wanted to talk about.
Well, there's two things I wanted to talk about. He just reminded me of the pink elephants, but and you had mentioned the story about the, not the Gila monster, but whatever they're called. In Quan Loy, but the first time I went up to Quan Loy, which is a base up in Northwestern Three Corps, I was the new guy there. We slept in tents, and we would take special forces other places. And so the first night there, I was sleeping, and I slept. You have to understand, I was getting a little paranoid. I was getting short at the time. So I'm sleeping with a chicken plate on my hand. I've got a pistol in my hand and a knife in my other hand. And in the middle of the night, I felt this incredible weight on me. And I go, God, what the heck is that? And I opened my eyes and looked down, and it was a snake crawling across my chest. And I'm trying to figure out, I can't shoot it, and I can't stab it. Because, you know, even though I had a chicken plate on, I killed myself. So I just jumped up yelling. And meanwhile, the other guys in the tent are all standing watching this unfold. And the snake just crawled over me and went on out the door. And they thought it was very funny. I did not, at the time, think it was very amusing. But
where did the snake come from, real quick?
It just wandered in. It was hungry.
Oh, my gosh. All right. You're listening to Veterans Radio. Humor and War. We'll be right back after this message.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Dave Martin from California has been patiently hanging on for the entire program, and then we've got Bill Feit from South Lyon who's hanging on, and we're going to go first to Dave Martin, who got up awfully early to give us a phone call or to take our phone call, and I want to say, Dave, welcome to Veterans Radio. You were a CB over in Vietnam.
That's correct. Dave Walker here, by the way.
What did I say, Dave? Oh, that's Dave Walker. Sorry, there's a Dave Martin back
We're
there.
We're thinking of Michael or something.
Right. Well, you've got a story about incoming and a fellow that that stuttered. Tell us about that story first.
Yeah, we first tour over with MCB3, unit you were with in July, and we greened to what goes on and retrospected the wrong thing. We were coming down the side of a hill, no cover, and got hit with a mortar attack. And so the only cover we could see was down at the bottom of the hill. There was a culvert going underneath the road. So we all ran down there, started punching in there like a bunch of rats in a pipe. And I'm not sure who the first or second guy is, but I was about third guy in. Another guy came in behind me, and then back behind him was a guy named DX, and DX stuttered really bad. The guy in between us, after we got in there and it settled down a little bit, realized he's claustrophobic, thought he couldn't breathe, and started panicking. So as he's kicking and screaming for all of us to get out of the way and get out of there, and of course we weren't going to scoot out the other end because we knew we'd probably get hit out there. Anyway, DX is behind him getting kicked in the head going, settle down, you're going to okay. So here we are in the middle of this mortar attack, DX trying to calm this guy down, we're all in there laughing. So anyway, pretty funny. But the next tour I did was down in the Mekong Delta area, and I had a couple of funny things down there happen. One, we had a monkey that we had trained to use a cigarette lighter. It was a pretty cute trick, teach him how to light cigarettes, until one day he took the cigarette lighter, or she did, and took a cigarette lighter next door and burned the neighbor's hooch down. So that wasn't too funny. But anyway, during the second tour, I was down in Mekong Delta and was attached to UDT 11. And we scooped these rivers, and then off the rivers would be these little canals. And we didn't have names for them, so we just used alphas, such as Gulf Canal, Delta Canal, that kind of thing. And this one point we used to go past, there was a Vietnamese outpost out there. And they would shoot out across our bow, which is pretty unnerving. You're on patrol getting ready to head out. Your mindset is into combat mode. And so we weren't obviously allowed to shoot at them. Supposed to be friendly. So the debate went on, and we needed some protocol. So the protocol was this. In fact, the question was this: how do we know they're not bad guys? And we were told, well, they're not hitting you, are they? And we said, okay. And so if we take rounds, they said, well, you can assume that you're under, you know, under attack and can return fire. So anyway, this one morning, I can't remember the exact day, but it was around 7:15 in the morning. We're heading upriver. It's September of, I'm trying to think, 1968. And anyway, we're heading upriver, and they start shooting out across our bow again. And we took a bunch of rounds right through the side of the boat. I don't know if whatever they did, we took rounds. And so we cranked it up. We had two PBRs and a mic boat. The mic boat was filled with some Army guys we were escorting in. And then for air support, we had these two Sea Wolves flying over us. So as soon as we took rounds, the mic boat went up channel a little bit further, waited for us there. We cranked up. First boat came in, laid fire down on the outpost, banked right and went to the right. Next boat came in behind it, laid down fire, turned around, went off the left, and circled around out the main channel there. And then the Sea Wolves came down and just hammered this thing. So in the after-action report, which became kind of a little minor legend in the, you know, you get these people, you make a story. About, well, this is one of them. And in the after-action report, skipper on the boat wrote, September, whatever the date was, 07:15 hours, received friendly fire, returned same. So, anyway.
That one, when you told me that, I broke out laughing, and I thought, boy, some of the civilians are going to be gasping at that one. But young guys do dumb things, and it might have been some Arvins that were doing dumb things, but there's a whole lot of other possibilities, too. A lot
there
of
really are.
Were VC. And there was also trail watchers that would give signals like that when somebody was coming along, and that was... the warning or the signal to the ambush that you were going to hit next.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of justification for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we never knew. We just went on with the rest of the mission. And,
probably never got shot at again from that point.
No, we did not.
Hey, Dave, thank you so much for being on Veterans Radio, and thanks for holding.
You're welcome.
It's always, hold on one moment.
No, I just wanted to talk about the friendly fire thing.
Oh,
sometimes when you would go pick up the Arvin Army for an insert or something along those lines, they would all come out every morning with a different colored bandana on. So if whatever the day might be, they either wore blue or they wore red or whatever. And we went up to pick this platoon up one day, and there were five guys with a blue bandana on, one guy with a red bandana on. The guy with the red bandana was taken away. We're not sure what happened to him.
Oh, okay.
So the bad guys were in and amongst the good guys.
They were. Indeed, they were. Dave, thank you very much again. And we're going to go to Bill Fight next. Bill's from South Lyon, Michigan. He's been waiting since the beginning of the program. Bill, welcome to Veterans Radio. Give us your short version, I guess. We got about 3 or 4 minutes for you, so just to warn you.
This comes into two stories because Dell reminded me of the first time I got shot at it, and it was the same time. We'd been on a patrol, and I had went got some. We were breaking for lunch, and I set the radio down on a big rock and went around behind a rock.
You were an RTO, a radio operator.
Right.
Yep. A target.
Yeah, target. Anyhow, I heard the radio going off a couple times, and so I ran back around the rock and bent down to pick it up, and the rock kind of disappeared between me and the radio about where my knee was. And it took me a second, and I stood up and I said, "Hey, Sergeant Walker, somebody's shooting at me." And
that's the thing to do.
And he said, "Grab that radio and get back here and we'll see what's going on." Well, it had been, we had sniper fire, and 2-6 India, the guy in the second platoon, had got shot. And he'd called in, and that's when all the radio antennas went down. Anyhow, we were looking for this guy that was shooting at us, and we were walking through these, like an orchard, bunch of trees and stuff along the river. And a guy that doesn't live too far from here is still alive, probably listening, was an M79 operator. I'm not going to tell you his name, but anyhow, everybody's looking and trying to find the guy that's shooting at us, and this guy finds him. And he looks up, sees the guy in the tree, and he's under this tree, and just flips his M79 up and from the hip shoots him. Well, an M79 is a hand grenade going off. And I got calling Charlie. It went off when it hit the guy, and obviously the tree and the guy and everything else kind of disappeared around it. And it wasn't supposed to go off that soon, but it did. And Charlie almost killed himself. Everybody, it was even funny at the time. a guy shooting an M79 right above his head. And
that was a 40 millimeter, and it would you could shoot it out at 400 yards, but you didn't want to shoot it too close because you would become part of the casualties. Then I imagine it made a bit of a mess too.
Oh, it made a big mess.
Okay.
Charlie got evacuated out.
Okay. Bill, thank you very much, and thanks for hanging on, and appreciate you being on Veterans Radio. We're cranking down, Dale, the stories that we've told. I know I meet some civilians later on today that listen to the program, and some ladies, and they're going to be asking me a couple of them, you know, what was funny about that. But what do you do? You laugh. I mean,
you can't cry at the time, and you can't, you know, scream and all these other things. You have to control your emotions. And then when you go back and look at it, first of all, you're amazed that you survived it, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then you say, wow, you know, how did this, you know, you just look at it and you go, how in the world did I survive that? Or if somebody, you know, like shooting an M79 at close range, Yeah, you just do it.
Where you shoot from the hip. And,
yeah, John.
And I want to say that this is the value for to all of you that don't belong to a veterans unit, Vietnam Veterans of America, VFW, whatever, or go to the reunions, do it. Because sometimes you doubt your memory, and it's only by listening to other guys tell the same kind of stories that you think to yourself, wow, that really could have happened. That really did happen.
It really did happen. That's the thing. Coming up next week, I want to do that real quick. I don't know if we've got 5 seconds. Coming up next week, the last day, the last flight out of Saigon. We've got the pilot. We've got the Marines that were there. Tune in to Veterans Radio. Until then,
you are dismissed.
Not all views and opinions expressed on Veterans Radio reflect the views of Veterans Radio or your local station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.